Soundstripe.
Oh my gosh, this last week like has been like such a little emotional roller coaster. For those of you who don't know, I am a teacher, and this past week was like wrapping up the school year. So our last day was Friday, which was 2 days ago at this point. And it was just a crazy chaotic week. Like I was trying to get the week before my final exams finished up because I teach Algebra 1 and 2, so I'm in high school. Typically have freshmen and juniors as the majority of my students, but I have a few sophomores and a few seniors. Like there's a little bit of every grade at least, but primarily freshmen and juniors. So anyways, I was trying to finish up all of my exams, making the answer keys and like the answer sheets, giving them the formulas, wrapping up grading everything, all their assignments and quizzes that they've had before, making sure it was entered correctly into our PowerSchool system, just literally like, I don't know, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, finishing up, wrapping up the year, and it had been a busy one. So I was on a little hiatus last week, and it was actually really nice because it gave me time to kind of reflect and like just in every direction of my life, to be quite honest, like as a teacher, but also as a mom and what's to come over the summer and the goals and the plans I want to get done over the summer. And so many things were just kind of wrapping up and tying up with a little bow on the end of it all, I guess. But I was such like a sappy freaking mess. So side note, like within the last 2 weeks of class or of school in general, my podcast situation broke to my students. They found out, it was like the buzz. They were all coming in. You have a podcast? Like, what? You don't have a podcast? Everybody was just like, what? No way. So I thought I was going to make it through the year. I was keeping my head down, just kind of staying quiet about it. Because, I don't know, that's weird. Like, I'm not going to go in my classes and be like, hey, guys, guess what Mrs. Bowen's doing? Like, it was just something I wasn't, like, intending to bring up to them. And I just thought, hey, they'll find it when they find it. And lo and behold, they did just that. But no, anyway, so with the final exams wrapping up and whatnot, that also meant having to say goodbye to my students who I won't see again or won't have again in class. And guys, this is something that like no one ever told me about. Like maybe I'm just like abnormally emotional, but after talking to like my fellow staff members, like coworkers, whatever, after talking to them, it turns out like, no, we all struggle saying bye to our students for the most part. And holy smokes, it kicked my butt this year. Because this was my third year of teaching. So when I started 3 years ago, I had all freshmen. So I came in as a clean slate or whatever. They were new to high school. They didn't know any of the teachers either. And so that was the first group of kids that I got to see through their freshman year. Then I had an off year with most of them as their sophomore year. And then I had them again in their junior year. And now they're out of my class and they're done in my room. And that was a big pill to swallow. That was tough. Those kids, especially like the ones that I won't have again, are where I get super stinking sappy. Like truly, if I talk about it too much, I could get all whiny and cryy about it right now. So I'm not going to let myself do that. But it just like no one told me about that. Like I just was not prepared to be so attached and to love these kids the way that I do. Like it opened up my eyes to like teachers, to how teachers really are, because there's like this stigma or like this, I don't know, this idea that teachers are just like, I don't know, they don't care about their kids. Not that they don't care, but like they're just teachers. Like, I don't know. Like, that's how I always viewed my teachers growing up. Like, oh, they go home and they probably study for fun and they read more books because they're a teacher. And then they come to school and they teach. And it's just like, okay, so much about that is not true. And I guess I just didn't realize how much like teachers really, really pour into their kids and how much they think about them. Like, I can tell you, like, hands down, I literally have thought about every single one of my kids individually at one point or another outside of class, just wondering, like, oh, I know this person had this thing coming up on the weekend. I wonder how that went for him. Oh, I know this person really struggled at school today and had a bad day. I wonder how they're doing today. Like, so much of those kids, like, and how they're doing, like, follows me outside of school and outside of work. And I just was not prepared to be the biggest, like, blubbering ball fest that I was, especially with my freaking foreign exchange student who, like, I just was not expecting to leave such a mark on me, I guess. I know I'm really rambling, but whatever. I guess I went into this year and I told him too, like, our first semester, we kind of knocked heads a little bit here and there. Like, it was establishing rules and getting to know each other and trying to figure out, like, is he going to be a good kid? And him trying to figure out, am I going to be a mean, bossy teacher? Like, there's so much of just getting to know a person within that first semester. And then in the second semester, in general, with all of my students, like, that's when our relationship just flourishes and we can really pick on each other and joke and have fun and, like, make class as enjoyable as possible, whether they're a math person or not. And, yeah. So this foreign exchange student, it got to me a little bit more because it's like, okay, cool. I just spent this year getting to know a kid and literally we'll never see them again. Like, what's the chances I'll ever see him again? Probably none, because he's moving back to his other country. And so, like, there's at least the sense of peace, like, with my other kids, like my juniors, who, again, I won't have them throughout their high school career anymore, where I'm like, okay, at least I know they're, for the most part, in the same area, in the same community, the same town. Like, chances are it's a small enough area, I will run into them outside of class, outside of school. And that's just, like, my little inkling of hope and, like, comfort when I have to say bye to them. Like, okay, I will see them around. Like, I'll at least get to see these kids around. And so it helps me not be a total hot mess. But, ooh, it's going to be really hard to let myself, like, get attached to a foreign exchange student again. I know that's not right. Like, I'm still going to, like, pour into them, obviously, and love them. But, man, that one got to me a little bit. So, anyways, with all this being said, it was just a week, a solid 2 weeks of just chaos and wrapping up the year and saying goodbyes. And at least I'll see those juniors back as seniors next year, and that'll be fun to be able to see them all the way through their high school careers. But anyway, so it's actually was surprising to me how much I missed just getting on here and doing my little podcast episode. So I guess, like, in the season of all the kids graduating and moving on, like, it just takes me kind of back to how I was as a student when I was graduating high school and, like, how unsure I was in every aspect of my life. Like, I was still trying to figure out who I was as a person. I was leaving a community and a town that I was always comfortable in and that I knew really well. And I was finally actually getting out of the area to kind of, I don't know, figure out who the crap I was. So, I don't know. It just, as I was thinking about it, it kind of brought me into this thought of, I don't know, like, everyone says, welcome to adulthood, like, okay, you gotta go to your 9 to 5 now, and woohoo, good for you, you're an adult, like, suckers, sorry about you seniors, you don't know how good you had it in high school when you didn't have to go work a full-time job and whatnot. And that thought alone kind of, like, irks me, because it kind of spiraled into this idea that so many of us just live this mundane, like, 9 to 5 life where we don't love our job, we don't love our life, we go through the motions, and we're just kind of stuck. And so that's kind of how I spiraled into what I want to talk about today. And it's just this, like, absolute non-negotiable attitude of, like, refusing to stay stuck. And I know there's, like, a lot of fear that comes with that, because typically if you run into that situation where you feel like you're stuck in a job or in a town or maybe in a relationship that you want to break up with, I don't know, whatever, I don't know, any goals that you have, like, you want to do something, but you're stuck, you're just not brave enough to maybe do it. Like, it all kind of goes back to this fear or this anxiety of, like, what's to come? Like, what really happens if I would make a move out of this regular mundane routine that I'm so comfortable in? And that's kind of where I took off on this episode. So I'm kind of looking at my, ooh, there's a hair stuck on my screen. Gross. I'm kind of looking at my outline as I'm going through this. And I remember so vividly, like, this was probably a huge turning point where I, like, really was head to head with God. Like, okay, I'm stubborn. You're trying to pull me in one direction. I don't want to go there. I'm comfortable right now where I'm at in my little zone. Even though it was a mundane situation, like, okay, so I'm just going to put it out there. So I'm trying to think back to when I was graduating high school, I was in a relationship that I was pretty certain I was ready to be out of. And even though I knew I wanted to make that move, like, I was also very, very scared. And I was just so stuck in this routine and a situation that I was comfortable in. Like, I knew what to expect. I knew the ins and outs of the relationship. And I was just like, no, like, I'm not gonna move from this. Like, I was at a standstill with God, and I could tell, like, the direction I was being pushed in. And I knew where our relationship was going, and I knew it was coming to an end. And still, for so long, for literally, like, guys, for so long, I tried to, like, deny that. And it's so stupid, but the best way that I can explain this is I think of my big freaking dumb dog, our dog that Mike and I have, who, she's a sweetheart. She is just like a ditzy dog. Like, I don't even know if that's a thing, but she's just like, doo, 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 doo. Like, I think of her. And when she was a puppy, like, the first time we were trying to give her a bath, she was terrified. Okay. So she did not want to get in the bath. She was like sitting down. You know how, like, dogs will sit and you'll pull on their collar and they just keep, like, dragging their butt across the floor. Like, no, they're not moving. They don't want anything to do with it. She's like a mess, needs to get in a bath. I don't know. She probably was like, she used to love rolling in the grass. Like, even now, sometimes we'll catch her rolling in the grass. So, big old mess, nasty bugs and dirt all over her. And so, yeah, had to get her in the bath. And she wanted nothing to do with it, was bobbing and weaving, dodging, pulling against us, like, was doing anything in her power to not get in that bathtub. And that's literally the visual that I, like, see of myself when I was a senior or just graduated from high school, actually. And God was pulling me in one direction, and I was just terrified, and I did not know what to expect, and I was resisting with everything that I could to just stay in this stuck, mundane kind of spot. Even though I didn't love it, I was just comfortable with it, and I didn't know how to make a move out of it. And so that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of what I'm thinking when I go into this idea of being stuck in the mundane. I'm speaking literally out of every feeling that I ever had in this position. Like, I can just remember it so clearly. I was just so scared, because at that time I was still trying to figure out who God even was. Like, I had talked about it previously before, like, I had always gone to youth groups and had a good community around me, and people were really, I mean, there are a lot of Christians where I grew up and where I live now, but I was still personally trying to figure out who the crap this God is, and if he's actually, like, nice. Is he mean? Is he just trying to set me up for failure? And that was a huge thing where I came head to head with him. And it was literally just like, I felt like I had no other option at that point but to finally just, like, submit to what his plans were. And that was the first time I had to actually, like, experience whether or not he was trustworthy. In those times, I was like, it's so weird to actually sit here and try to explain it, because thinking back then, it made perfect sense to me. Like, no, I want to stay in this relationship. I don't want to move. Like, not only was I going to try to stay in this relationship, but I was also going to try to go to the same college that he was at. And I could feel so clearly, like, God was saying, no, like, this is not the relationship I want for you. This is not the college I want you to go in. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I was fighting so hard against it, even though part of me really wanted to pursue that. Like, part of me was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't want to go to this college and be with this person is in a relationship anyways, but I also didn't want to do the breaking up part of it. I was in such a headspace where I was incredibly anxious and, like, borderline depressed, because what I had imagined and pictured for my future was taking a big old curveball, and I was not prepared for that at all. And so in my mind, like, life had always been so easy, right? You have the same routine as a kid for literally 12 years. You go to school, you see your friends, you go home. You have a summer, and then you go back to school, and you do it again for 12 years. And so it had been such a consistent routine, and I was, like, freaking out by the fact that that wasn't going to be my routine, that I was holding on so tightly to this situation that I didn't love, but it was comfortable, and it was a routine again of some sort. And so I was incredibly anxious and, like I said, like, borderline depressed. And I was just all sorts of, like, what is happening next? Like, I was stuck, just literally stuck is the best way that I can describe it, not knowing how to make the right move. And so, of course, this is like my example of a breakup and moving schools or whatever. But then it fast forward, it happens again when I was trying to figure out what career I wanted to pursue, what degree I wanted to go for. And then even like leaving my degree as an adult and pursuing something, a different job that was outside of that. Like these things kind of add up over time where we are assuming that we know what's going on in our life. We have this routine down. We have something in our minds of how our life is going to go and what our future holds. And then we get stuck in a routine that we don't totally love. Like, I feel like that's something that a lot of us get stuck in. Time and time again, like, I have been faced with these scenarios where, had it been my choice, like, I would have gone in the total, like, opposite direction than what God was calling me to go. Like, truly, I would have gone to a different school. I would have stayed with that boyfriend. I would have tried to make things work. I would have gone and did what dental hygiene my whole life. I would have gone in a totally different direction, and I would have missed out on the best things that have ever happened in my life. And I'm so freaking thankful that I submitted to what God was asking me to do, even though it was never, ever easy. But I think the thing is, like, we get stuck because we don't really think we have other options, right? Like, I mean, I feel like I'm the perfect example to that. Like, my only options, according to my degree, go work dental hygiene. I can't move up in a position. It's not like I get promoted to a different spot. It's literally go to your job, clean teeth, and take care of whatever oral health, and go home, and then do it again the next day. And I cannot tell you in any other way than it was such a God thing that I was able to make the transition out of dental hygiene into teaching. And had I not made that move when he was calling me, guys, I would have missed out on the best thing I've done for myself in regards to a job, like in regards to my career. Like I just said, like, how long did I spend at the beginning of this episode talking about my kids? Like, my kids being my students, they are the best part of my job, hands down. No matter how much I have to yell at them, no matter how many times they yell and talk over me and try to interrupt, no matter how many times they give me attitude and I have to throw attitude back at them, like, it does not matter. Like, they are the best part of my job, and I am so thankful that I chose to follow God's direction when he was calling me out of a mundane routine that I was finding myself in dental hygiene, for my specific example. But I think it's really important to highlight the fact that it's never easy. Like, it's never easy to just, like, leave the mundane. You think it would be because no one likes to just feel stuck. No one likes to feel stuck. Well, then why do we stay? Like, truly, why do you stay if no one likes to be stuck? Well, because, again, it's comfortable and it's something secure and something that you're familiar with. But, again, that's a huge cause of our anxiety. I remember thinking, and I talked to Mike about this when I was still in dental hygiene, like, is this just what my life is going to be? Like, this is it. I go to work, I clean teeth, and I come home and I do it again the next day, and I'm going to do this for years. And that thought right there caused me so much sadness and anxiety and a little bit of depression. I don't know if I'd say full-blown depression, but I was for sure down in the dumps. Like, and I think what I found out, like, the hard way, because, like I said, like, I dug my heels in. I was dragging my butt just like my dog was. Like, I was being incredibly stubborn to follow God's calling and to go where he wanted me to go, that the anxiety was literally spiraling out of control. I don't consider myself a very anxious person anymore, but I for sure went through a period where I was, like, a mess. And I was, like, almost thinking about it, wonder if I was, like, even fully alert. Like, I can't tell you, like, what was going on really in reality, because I was living so much in this fear in my mind. Like, I was living in these made up scenarios in my mind of what was going to happen. And that's what anxious thoughts are, right? It's just these terrifying thoughts that we put in our mind that aren't true, but they take us out of reality, and they take us out of reality and they put us in a state of, like, constant fear. Like, that's all that anxiety is. And so when I think about myself as a 18-year-old and trying to deal with all these emotions and figuring out what was to come, like, it's hard for me to even really think about what was reality of that time, because I was so stuck in this horrible mindset and horrible headspace where I was just an anxious, anxiety-ridden mess. I really want to talk about how getting past that anxiety is, like, when your life begins, truly, when you can overcome the anxiety and set that to the side and really embrace life for what it is and embrace the fact that God has it under control and you don't, like, that's when life begins. But it comes with a lot of, like, practice. I remember literally having to, like, take my thoughts out of my head. And anytime I started to fall back into this anxiety ridden kind of routine and these anxious thoughts would come into my mind, I would physically, this is kind of weird, but this is literally what I would do at the time. I would look anywhere in the room. So right now I'm sitting in my living room and I would start literally like looking for colors that I'd see. Like, okay, I'm looking at my family pictures right now. That's a blue shirt and that's a yellow shirt and that's a pink dress and that's a pink cup sitting over there. That's a blue cup. And it's weird. And it says like that, but it's weird to say it like that, but that's what I would literally have to do. Like, I would continuously have to practice taking myself out of those anxiety ridden thoughts, because otherwise, it was like a default, like I was living in that state and I could not pick myself out of that state. So I had to literally start looking around the room and making myself look at what is real, what is reality. And even in those tiny little descriptions of just the colors that I was seeing, like, it would give me a break from being in my mind so heavily over these terrifying thoughts. So anyways, I really had to master the skill of first of all, recognizing my anxiety thoughts, because like I said, it was default. Like, I wouldn't even realize that I was spiraling in my mind until I just caught myself. And then I'd be like, oh crap, I've been thinking these unrealistic, crazy, scary thoughts for so long. Like, no wonder I'm panicking right now and like picking at my skin and like just being weird, just picking at my nails and all the things. And so I would have to, first of all, recognize those anxiety-ridden thoughts that kind of came into my mind. And then two, I would have to pull myself out of those thoughts and bring myself back into reality. And then three, which I am getting onto now, is I really, really started diving into what does God say about anxiety. And so I have a few verses that I remember relying on heavily as a kid and or as an 18-year-old, I guess. And just the words that really, really encouraged me in those times when I was trying to make a move, but I didn't know how to, and I was just so incredibly scared of what was to come. So the first one is Proverbs 12:25. It says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. And so this one, if I literally think about what the phrase is that says it weighs him down, okay, it weighs a heart down. Think about what that means. Like, when you're weighed down, you're slower, you're sluggish, you're incapable of moving at your full pace, you're downcast, right? All of these things kind of pull you back into slow motion and you're not able to live life in your full potential, okay? It strips you from being able to live to your fullest, truly. That's what anxiety is doing to you. Philippians 4:6 says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done. The biggest takeaway from that one that I always think of is it doesn't say to try not to worry. It doesn't say to only worry about some things. It literally says don't worry about anything, like not a single thing, nothing, not anything. And so you could say, but what about this or what about this? Trust me, guys, like if you want to play the comparison game, I've got a few comparisons that I think that's not what this is about, but I'm just saying, it's easy for you to be like, well, what about I'm sick? Or what about this person I love is injured? And I get that more than you probably know, a lot of you. Maybe you know me personally, you know some things that my family and I have been through, and like that would probably make more sense to you. But my point is that it says not to worry about anything. Do not worry about anything. And I think really, truly, once you can master that skill, and I'm not saying I have, I think I've gotten incredibly better, like much, much better than what I was, than what I was able to do. But once you can master that skill of not worrying about anything, like I truly think that's like an awesome way of worship too. Like that's a really, really cool way of being able to worship God in a way that's just like subtle, like really that's just in your heart of saying, well, I don't have to think twice about it. I don't have to worry about it. This is the direction that God's calling me, and that's where I'm going, and I don't have to think and worry about it. Like, that's a pretty cool way to worship God, because it can be really hard, right? It can be incredibly hard to lay down those worries, and I am talking to myself a lot in that because I am a worrywart to my core. But like I said, it does get better. It's also this recognition that, like, God is in my corner. Like, I truly don't have to worry about it because whatever challenges or victories that come my way, like, he's got it. He's in my corner. He's taking care of it. And here's the cool thing about this. Like, when I really think about this verse, it's like God doesn't need us to pray in order for him to make things happen. Like, he could do it on his own, and he could make things happen just on his own. But he wants us to pray, because that's the second part. It says to pray about everything. Pray about everything. He wants us to come to him with our requests, and he wants us to ask him for things, and he wants to be able to bless us when we ask him for things. So that's one thing that I think is really cool. Like, he just wants us to come to him as a source of comfort. Like, that's our goal. I wrote this part down too, is this a little side note. Like, I think of the story of when, like, Simon Peter, for those of you who don't know, like, he was a fisherman, and so he was out trying to fish and wasn't catching jack crap. And so he was basically just like bummed out, super hopeless. He needed the fish in order to make payments, and he was getting nothing. And so he was in some serious trouble at that point. And then Jesus comes along, and after like a long day again of not catching anything, Jesus tells him to cast his Jesus tells him to cast his net again. And even though he was like reluctant and like, dude, okay, cool, I've been doing this all day, literally nothing's gonna happen, he does it anyway. And of course, that's when the fish like come in like crazy, and he brings in more fish than he ever dreamt, and it was like over, like taking over his boat. And I guess my thought in that was like, well, first of all, like, Peter was hopeless. Like, he was there. He'd been doing it all day. He was down in the dumps. He was like, crap, this is how I go. Because, again, he needed to make payments, and he was in a tight situation. So he's relying on what he was catching to get him out of that. So he was struggling, right? He was done. But then he trusted Jesus, and he tried again, and he was blessed beyond what he could have ever imagined. He was not expecting to get a literal boat ton of fish. But second of all, like, Jesus could have literally said to the fish, hey, jump in the boat, hop on in, he needs you. Okay, like, he's the ruler, the commander, the living, the breathing creatures, blah, 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 right? We know that. So he literally could have said, okay, jump on in, fish, time to go. But he didn't. Instead, he told Peter to cast his net, which is huge, because he's calling Peter to take the action. Jesus isn't taking the action and doing the work for him. He's calling Peter to take the action, even though Jesus would be capable enough to do it. And that's just like, to me, that's awesome, because he's just asking for a step of obedience. Like, he just wants to see, can you obey me? Are you going to trust me? And that's a really cool thing, because then again, he blesses Peter with more than what he could have ever, more than what he could have ever imagined. He doesn't need us to do anything, is my point in this little passage. Like, I think it's really cool that Jesus could have done everything. Like, God can do everything on his own. He doesn't need us, but he wants us. Like, he wants us to be a part of it. Isn't that not freaking cool? Like, to me, that's cool. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. The third verse, though, that I have in regards to anxiety is 1 Peter 5:7. This is my favorite verse. I think it's literally becoming one of my favorite verses ever. I have it hanging on my bathroom mirror, and I literally read it every morning. And it says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. Ooh. Okay, I'm just going to pick this one apart. Let me tell you why this one just is, like, freaking cool to me. It says, humble yourself. Boom, first point. You got to humble yourself. Okay, we don't know it all. Like, we're stuck in this mundane. We're stuck in our positions. We're in our routine because we think that's the best, and we don't know our way out of it. We're just stuck, and that's just life for us. No, humble yourself. You don't know it all. You have no idea what God has in store for you. And let me tell you what, it's way freaking better than the situation you're trying to get out of. Okay, if you're trying to get out of something and that's been placed heavily on your heart, like, I truly believe, like, God does that for a reason. You're not meant to be, again, I said it before, I'll say it again, you're not meant to be just a warm body going through the motions of life. Like, you're meant to do some really freaking cool things. Don't stay stuck. Humble yourself. Realize that he is in control. He's going to do awesome things for you. You just have to be able to be receptive and move when he calls you to. It's not about us at all, basically, is what I take away from that. It's not about us thinking we know it all and we have it under control. It's about him and what he's planning to do. The second part says, so that in proper time he may exalt you. Okay, there's a reason God is calling us to be humble, so that he can do really freaking cool things with whatever he has in store. He's in control, and he will exalt us in due time. So I actually went through and I Googled the definition of exalt. Okay, so based off of Google, this is what Google says exalt means. It says to place at a higher rank or level, held in high regard, or in a state of extreme happiness. Okay, like, Does that not freaking pump you guys up a little bit? Does that not freaking pump you up? What the crap? He said he wants to exalt us in due time. Like, he's planning. That's his plan. His plan is to place us at a higher rank or level in a state of extreme happiness. That is what he wants to do for your life. He does not want you to be stuck in a routine that you hate and that you're trying to get out of, or a position that you're dreading, or you're going to work and you're like, oh my gosh, this is my life. Like, this is what I have to do for my whole life. Or if you're in a relationship that you've been wanting to part ways with. If you're in a situation where you are trying to get out of, don't stay stuck for the sake of staying stuck because it's comfortable. Like, no. It says he plans to exalt us in due time. What? So that at the proper time, he may exalt you. Like, he's got some cool freaking things in store, you guys. That pumps me up every stinking time. And here's the other thing, you guys. He's on your side. Like, does that not, I don't know. Am I the only one who's pumped up about this? That little phrase freaking makes me excited because it's like he's on your side. He wants to do really cool things, things that you can't even imagine. Think of the best thing that could happen to you right now in your head, wherever you're listening. What is something you would love to do? Instead of this job that I hate, I would love to do this. Guess what? He wants to do that times 100. Like, he has such a better plan in store for you if you trust the calling that he's asking you to move in. And that's the best thing. Like, it's all so attainable, is I guess what gets me all pumped up is, like, we have the wildest dreams that we could ever dream up and we can think of. And so many times we're like, oh, that's just, I wish that could come true. And I wish that was for me, but it's not. This is just my life. And that's a bummer for me. No. It's right there, you guys. Like, the things that are in your heart and the things that you want to do, like, if it's according to God's will, if it's something that's honorable to him, obviously, and asking you to go dream to be a drug dealer and he's going to let you do that. Like, that's not what I'm saying, but you get what I mean, right? Hopefully. Your goals and your dreams are not that far away. Like, they are attainable if you can humble yourself and do it in God's will, like, with his help, with him leading you the way, not you taking all the action, not you trying to take credit for him. When you let him step in and do his part, holy freaking crap, it's gonna come into existence. I totally truly believe that. And then the last part, it says casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. That's huge, guys. That's huge. He cares for you. Like, that is the warm, cuddly, like, big hug, wrap this up, tie a bow on it kind of ending to this passage or to this verse, because he will never, ever, 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 ever call you to something that is not going to benefit you. Like, he cares for you. He wants the best for you. He wants you to do awesome freaking things. Like, that's the best thing. Like, I think the world has done a really great job of painting God in this way that is mean and condemning and judgy and just a bad guy. Like, they've literally painted God as a bad guy. And that's not the case, you guys. He's on your side. Like, he wants you to do some really freaking cool things. The wildest things you could ever dream of. Like, he wants that for you if you can just pursue them with him in your mind and with him leading you in that direction, or leading the way. The best way, I feel this one to my core, because the best analogy I can give is, like, so many times during the year, I'll hear my students be like, oh, this teacher, so-and-so, just doesn't want us to pass. Like, I swear he just doesn't even want us to pass this class. It's too hard, or whatever, something along those lines. And so I really drive into my kids, like, from day one, I am on your team. Like, in my class, in math, whatever class you're in, I'm on your team. I want you to get 100% and beyond. I want you to get A's and do the best you possibly could. Like, I'm on your team. I want you to have all of that in my class. And I'm cheering for you. But that doesn't mean I'm going to have you skip out on the hard assignments. That doesn't mean you get to pass the quizzes, or, like, just you don't have to take the tests and the quizzes. You still have to go through the tough stuff to get that. But, like, I'm on your side. Like, I want that for you. But because of my integrity as a teacher, I'm not going to lessen the criteria and lower my standards to make it easier on you. Instead, I'm going to build you up and give you what you need and hopefully the tools and the capabilities to go through my class and succeed with the tools that you've learned. And I really feel like that's how God approaches us in life. Like, he wants us to live life to the best of our abilities and to do awesome things and to, you know, achieve all of the goals. But that doesn't mean he's not going to train us and have to kind of mold us and get us into the proper form in order to do those things, right? He's got to give us the tools and teach us the lessons and ask us to be obedient, to follow him in order to get us to that point. And so I think it's, I think that's really awesome. Like I really, really feel like doors open significantly when you fully put your trust in God and you don't let the anxieties take over and stop you from pursuing things that could be really freaking cool. So I don't know, guys, I hope wherever you are in life that this is something that makes you really excited. I really, really hope that this gives you hope. I hope that you are able to see a light at the end of the tunnel in whatever stuck situation you're in, because you do not have to stay stuck. And in fact, you're not supposed to stay stuck. You're supposed to do really cool things. And if you can humble yourselves, again, I'm going back to that 1 Peter verse. It was 1 Peter, let me look it up. It's 1 Peter 5:7. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Right? So if you can, wherever you are in life, look at that phrase and really just do what you can to humble yourselves, understanding that God is in control, not us. Cast your anxieties on him and he will exalt you in due time. That's huge. I'm really freaking excited to see where that could take you guys and see where that might play out in your life. So just know that, like, you're way closer to doing awesome things than you think if you can make that switch and let God lead you rather than trying to do it on your own. He's going to open some really freaking awesome doors. So just don't let anxiety and fear stop you, right? Like, we can't let that prevent us from taking the next really awesome step towards the right direction. I always have to remind myself, and I have to look it up, actually. There's this list, and it's been on Instagram or Facebook or Pinterest, I don't know, for like ever. I remember seeing this as like a high schooler, but it's like a list and it's like a T-chart kind of. So on one side it says God's voice versus Satan's voice, and it says God's voice will still you and comfort you and give you peace and so on and so forth. And I'll have to look it up and somehow attach it to this episode. But and then on the other side, it says versus what Satan's voice sounds like, and it's panic and fear and depression and anxiety and all of the things that we experience when God wants to do something really cool with us. Of course, Satan wants to throw these emotions and these panicky feelings in our way and in our direction to try and intervene us from doing whatever really cool things we could do on the other side of that. And if we can recognize that, hey, those feelings of fear, anxiety, depression, blah, 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 whatever, so on and so forth, hopelessness, those don't come from God. If we can separate the two and say, wait a second, this is actually a good thing. Like, when I'm feeling those feelings, that's actually a good thing, because that means for whatever reason, like, the devil's trying to stop me here. That means on the other side of this door is going to be something really, really cool. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but I really, really, like, that's my exact thought process when I come up to situations where I'm scared or I'm anxious or I'm not feeling brave or whatever the case is. Whenever I recognize those feelings, I'm like, wait a second, this could actually be a really good sign, because if I'm feeling this way, that means there's a reason that Satan wants to stop me right here, because on the other side of this, whatever I'm trying to do, it could be really freaking awesome. So anyway, you guys, I hope that gives you some encouragement. It's been fun getting on here and rambling again for a little bit. For those of you who stuck around, thank you for hanging out with me. I love doing this, and so I'm gonna be back, and again, I hope this doesn't come off as super preachy and whatnot, but I really just think these are the things that I have personally used in my own life to kind of combat any kind of feelings that I've ran into that have been not so fun. So hopefully these little tidbits are something you guys can take into your life and apply them as well. So anyways, you guys, it's been fun. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I love you guys to pieces, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.